Christmas chicken.
I'm gonna start the podcast with that.
Foolishness.
Right. Crispy chicken.
Welcome back to the Black Is Break with yours truly, KC Layman. We have a lovely roundtable jumping off tonight. Tonight's guests are Black Is podcast members, Chris Layman, Toria Williams, Malcolm Darrell, and extra special guests, Darius Gray and Rasan Campbell. And I'm so sorry, dear. What's your name again?
Alicia Beecham.
Alicia Beecham. Soon to be Alicia Beecham Campbell. Hey. And tonight's topic is crispy chicken. The Mary J. Blige Burger King commercial. Subtopic for me: are we as Black people being a bit too sensitive when it comes to this commercial? Now, we all just watched, and you all of the listeners will have access to this with the podcast. We've just watched the original commercial, the actual Burger King commercial that was pulled off the air because it was deemed racist. We also watched, what's the brother's name? Durand. He's the background singer for Erykah Badu, and his remixed, like, actual R&B hit version of the Crispy Chicken song. And then we watched Second City and their parodies, three parodies, about this particular commercial. People, what are we feeling? Are we genuinely pissed off at Mary J. Blige for getting her $2 million and singing about this crispy chicken, the new crispy chicken rap? Are we mad about that?
I can't even say that I'm mad at Mary. I just, I really don't expect more from somebody of her stature. We
wow.
Talking about a woman.
Wait a minute.
We talking about a woman who dated KC from Jodeci and took him seriously. We're talking about a woman who's, how can I love somebody else when
Mary,
I can't love myself enough to know not to make a fried chicken commercial show? This broad was out for a paycheck, and I'm not mad at her.
That was Darius.
Going in wow. On Mary.
Right, going in. Wow.
But I love her music.
Clearly.
Outside of fried chicken.
Well, what's interesting about the...
It wasn't fried chicken, it was crispy chicken.
which don't be played, be that is fried.
Not this wrapped is, up in a wrap.
This is Brother Malcolm. But what's interesting about the commercial is... At first glance, am I offended? No. But I know that I have to be offended because if it was any other, if it was, if somebody was singing about Old E, I mean, we see these all the time though. People are doing that. I mean, when you look at a Cool Cigarettes campaign, you look at a Hennessy campaign, you look at a Ciroc campaign, they all have some kind of pop cultural music reference to get you feeling like you're in the club and this much. Now, am I going to be in the club and be thinking about crispy chicken?
Yeah.
Because after the club, after the party, after the club, you know, it's the hotel lobby after party. So, you know,
Burger King closes at 10.
No, they got 24-hour Burger King, brother. But the question really to me is, why are we so sensitive about this? And there may be a fraction of us that are not sensitive at all, and they are jamming to this, and they're like, "What? Why did you take it off the air?" I think what it is that we still have a sensitivity to Black people and negative images of the past, whether it be us and how we ate watermelon, or you know that fried chicken is associated with, I don't know, niggas and laziness. I mean, there's just, you know, and so our food that we love, and it's not even just our food. Come on, watermelon
white folks eat fried chicken
more than we do, probably. And what's interesting is
fluffy,
like watermelon and fried chicken. That just feels very Americana if you really think about it. Yeah. And so why? I think because of the negative connotations and the negative past that have been associated with black people, chicken and watermelon, I think it's very challenging. Like, I'm not going to lie. If I'm at a company barbecue, I'm not eating watermelon in front of my coworkers.
I am, but in all seriousness, Malcolm makes a good point. This is Darius, and there is just an endless amount of marketing that goes toward products that, you know, paint the black community in not such a positive light. But I think the problem with this is not so much the negative images, but that we don't have enough positive images to counter them. Mm-hmm. And so that's all that people see. And so when they see black people, this is what they think of. I think any culture or community has, you know, these things that people kind of give them business about.
The stereotypes.
The stereotypes, whatever you want to call them. But I think we just need to work toward creating some positive imagery.
Yeah, I think it's so funny. When I looked at the parodies, the Second City parodies, I was like, this is what black people saw when they saw the Mary J. Blige commercial. This was their interpretation. She might as well be singing about chicken fried and fatback wrapped in cornbread chitlins. Tortillas with chitlins and grits. But
don't forget the pickle juice.
Ultimately, I think it was just an all-out bad advertising campaign. It was a bad commercial. This is how it was written, and this was the actual spec script. Like, this was the treatment for the commercial. Whoever's idea of putting Mary J. Blige on top of a table in a Burger King on the mic, a Burger King, mind you, where all the employees are white, where the fuck
Which
are we?
I've never seen a Burger King with all white.
Right, where are we? Yeah. But putting her inside of a Burger King on top of a table, interrupting the conversation, talking about what's with the new crispy, or what's in the new crispy chicken wrap, and that bust into a crispy chicken wrap concert. Terrible.
And you know it's a national
concept.
Commercial. Yeah. That's the thing I think you have to really deal with, is that it's a national commercial. So you know that people in parts of America where there probably are white folks working in Burger King, mm-hmm. right? We live in mm-hmm. Los Angeles.
This is true.
So we know that the majority of the workers are probably going to be Chicano or maybe some black folks. But so it just depends on what your workforce is. But in a national commercial, we have to be honest with ourselves. The majority of the country is white. So that's also a problem, because this is another image going forth in this country that represents, it really is dealing with stereotypes, right? Like, and even the way her, even the way she interrupts has a sass to it. That's also a character
connotation.
Yeah, it's, you know, she's sassy, and it's terrible acting. First of all,
you want to get a chicken wrap?
Like, come on. Like, what are you saying?
And that is part of Mary's persona.
She was the sassy hip hop girl. So I don't think there was any other way to.
This is not Mary J. Blige 411.
What'd you say?
You've been defending this point, you know, and I'm about to put you over my knee in a minute. But
that's another.
I'm
podcast.
Waiting till marriage. You said it.
Wow. You know what?
Crispy chicken.
As Malcolm was speaking, what I'm realizing is that we can connect this to the earlier podcast and all the other discussions that we have, and I just really think that with what's going on with President Obama and the disrespect that's, you know, he's just being slaughtered by the media. I just think there's an all out assault. We're at a point where there is an all out assault on the black race on so many different levels. Yeah. However, we can be degraded, you know. And it seems subtle. It seems like it's just happenstance. It seems like, oh, it's just another thing. But it's really not funny. Because when you pair it up with everything else that's going on in the world and all the other challenges that we have as a people, you know, I just can't help but think that somebody is out to get us. Mm-hmm. And somebody's on the prowl once again.
Yeah, and that's the way I look at it as well. It's like,
this is Rasan.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Just look at the timing of all this, you know what I'm saying, in the midst of what's going on in the country, you know, with the Trayvon Martin case, and not to really, like, go too much in on that. It's just, you know, it really boils down to the image that people perceive in terms of how they look at us, but really, on a whole nother level, how we look at ourselves. You know what I'm saying? It's like, who's really the enemy? We are our own worst enemies in that aspect, because we keep perpetuating these images for what? To sell out, you know what I'm saying, to earn a couple of bucks. I mean, the economy right now is, you know, hey, the dollar is nothing, really. So, I mean, $2 million for her to do that, over $2 million is, you know, that's cool. But at the same time, it's like, in the whole scheme of things, it's nothing, really. You know what I'm saying? It's like, the way I look at it, you selling your soul. But then when something else happens to us, you know, we catch feelings. But we really have to, I mean, it's no checking system for ourselves. You know what I'm saying? We have to come to a point to where we start checking ourselves as a people. You know, that's the way I look at it.
Yeah, this is Chris speaking. It is a lot, because, I mean, my thought was the treatment, if they just shot it differently, I could probably deal with it. I mean, part of it is, with black people, it's like we always, it's just black people like music, and music is really associated with our culture. But a lot of us get frustrated that every time it's something related to food or a product that seems to be marketed specifically toward us or stereotypically something that we like, we gotta sing.
We gotta dance.
Yeah, we gotta sing and dance. And it's just, yeah, that's what it feels like. And right. And you, part of me feels a little mad at Mary, just because, like, I want to know, like, when you saw this and they showed it, were you not like, that's not gonna work. No, like her whole intro and coming in and interrupting, which is like, why, that's not, you know, that ain't lady. Like, why are you interrupting somebody just like, what's in the new chicken wrap?
That's the subconscious message. Right. And that's part of what I'm saying, is that people know what our weaknesses are. We've exposed them. Mm-hmm. And if they don't know, it's not hard for one of us to be paid to tell what our weaknesses are. You know, and so they know. This is no accident.
No, it's just, but part of it is, how much on her do you blame? Because I get people who are like, I wouldn't, for $2 million, I might, you know, people joke about it. People actually do joke about it. Like, yeah, hearing what the Housewives of Atlanta make, when Nene, you know, would you act that's ignorant for $750,000?
I don't think Nene's acting, so let's not even go there.
No, but I mean, are you okay with putting out, especially, okay, look, the first season, if you like, all right, I'm gonna do this show, and then you see the show. At what point are you kind of like, how they are portraying you, how they're editing your footage to make you look? At what point are you like, you know what, I'm good?
But it's almost the worse they make you look, the bigger the paycheck.
Right, and it goes down to what America is saying, that we know everybody got a price. You may be like, I'm not going to do that, but it's like, if I give you enough money, you will do it.
Like somebody said.
I have a question, though, because Al Jarreau did a commercial years ago for McDonald's, and he was singing.
Yeah,
would we have been less offended? And I'm not offended, but would we have been less offended if we didn't see her, but we heard her voice singing about chicken? Because we still see celebrities do that all the time, and then you, in hindsight, go, "Oh, that was such and such singing that." Would it have been less? Is it because she's singing about chicken?
Yeah,
that is exactly why we're upset. Because honestly, I don't think we have a problem with the Ciroc videos, because there's a brilliant commercial.
That's alcohol.
I know, but it's still black-owned. Yeah,
it's still alcohol. It's still promoting an image of we party, and when we get rich, we gonna make alcohol. So it's almost like, well,
exactly,
where are
but
the
it's
standards?
An image that it's
because
not
we wrapped up coonery in a classic.
But
look,
alcohol is not specific to black people. There is not gonna be a chicken commercial with Latinos. There's not going to be a chicken commercial Asian. Chicken, watermelon.
Taco Bell had the little Spanish-speaking Chihuahua dog. Do you think people were offended?
People were very offended by that. Do you see the Chihuahua dog anymore? That was a very offensive campaign.
But he, I mean, it sold for years.
Yeah, it sold.
But first of all, that doesn't mean, look, this Burger King campaign is probably going to sell because, again, we're two things. One, we're making an assumption that there's a consciousness level that Sister Mary J. Blige is at, first of all. I'm not going to make that assumption with anybody who's making a commercial where they're like, I could get $2 million to ram and brought some chicken, for sure. First of all, we got all kinds of artists out there who are selling their souls for a dollar. So we have to start this conversation from, what is the consciousness level of the people who are receiving these contracts and are doing these commercials? Because if your conscience could care less, and you're like, I'm getting $2 million to sing about chicken, and I used to live in the projects,
I will sing
I think
about,
it's unfair to take this one commercial saying, and say that this is just the conscious? Makeup or the fabric of Mary J. Blige.
Conscious. I'm saying there's a consciousness that I think there's a certain level of people who are saying, nope, I don't care how much you would pay me. I'm not going to be singing about the fresh watermelon that just came out the field, nor will I be singing about the fresh chicken that just came out your fryer. There's just a certain group of people who probably won't be there. Now, there's some people who are like, what's the problem? People eat fried chicken. Why are we getting all offended? People eat the fried chicken. People going to go and get the crispy chicken. People eat KFC. They still eat in churches. God help them. They're still eating Golden Bird. You know what I'm saying? So my thing is, it happens, and that's the reason why I brought it up. Why are we still offended by it when we perpetuate, partake, still finance these companies that sell us these products that, one, frankly, are not good for us? You know, I was like, you know what, I need to dump fried food in 2012 because even though I just had some of those Ruffles chips. But...
I'm talking about
like deep fried, like fresh out the fryer chicken, all that stuff, because that stuff's not even good for us anyway. So that's a whole other conversation. But I just think that part of this conversation is the assumption that people have a consciousness level that may be similar to ours. I don't want to generalize with the panelists. And so that's why there may be some frustration with it.
But I also don't want us to become too sensitive to the situation where we're hiding who we are. Like you said, you wouldn't eat watermelon in front of your co-workers. And when I'm at work, my diverse staff, they bring their food in, you know, and they're not like, I don't want her to see me eating the fried rice. They're talking
not been associated,
you know,
with a negative.
I don't care because I am who I am, and I'm not gonna hide my head and eat watermelon in the corner. Absolutely not. Why would I? Because you're...
The imagery, if you look at historically, if you go back to Birth of a Nation, if you go back to all the images,
then we shouldn't dance in public.
No, what I'm saying is that's the difference between us and other cultures. In America, black people being associated negatively with watermelon, fried chicken, laziness, that is the difference. That is the difference between us and you know what I'm saying? There are no predominant images of Latinos and Asians being associated. I mean, yes.
Because the only dominant images in America are
black
and
white.
Exactly.
But at the same time, I'm not going to deny parts of my culture that are okay with me because I don't want to be ashamed. No, I'm not going to say I'm lazy, but if watermelon and celebrating and chitlins and all of that, that's part of my culture, I'm not going to stop eating it because you might look at me funny. I have a right. If this is what my people did and I enjoy it, absolutely. I'll be damned as a black woman that put in all her hard work and I'm sneaking in the corner eating watermelon because I don't want them to see me eat it when I know they cut theirs up and eat it.
I get Michael's point that, because I do have them feeling sometimes where you like, if I eat this and I look up, it's like half the restaurant gonna be looking at me like, oh shit. But then on other hand, if I want it, you like, you know what, I want to eat it, and I don't really give up. You know, you might be, you know what, today I'm feeling a little like, you know what, I don't want to touch that shit today. But tomorrow you might be like, I want some watermelon. I'm going to eat that shit.
I'm just trying not to deal with the negative comment that I know will eventually come. I just don't want to deal with it. And that's probably where it's coming from for me. Because I deal with people who they just say ignorant stuff. And I'm just like, I really want to punch you right now.
Well, then you got to check them.
Earlier, you talked about how you would switch up your dress. You would wear baggy khakis and then
Converse.
What's the difference? What's the difference?
So then eat your watermelon.
I don't like watermelon. I'm going to let Rasan
speak. I think one thing.
With salt?
I've had it seedless, seeded, cut, open. I don't like it. It's too much work.
If you like what you're hearing so far, make sure you like us on Facebook at Black Is Magazine and follow us on Twitter at Black Is Online. Now, back to the show.
I think one thing, though, like going back to, you know, these celebrities, and one thing that I think is bothering us is the fact that when we talk about, you know, our so-called role models, it's like, we look at these, we look at our celebrities, and these are the only people that we see as representing us to the world. And I think we have to come to a point to where we really let them go.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Because these motherfuckers ain't doing us no, really, they ain't tripping off of us. You know what I'm saying? They only caring about themselves, you know? And in terms of, like, their conscious level, I can really say that a lot of them, they may have some level of consciousness, but they might be in a position to where they can express that consciousness. You know what I'm saying? They have people that are basically making these decisions for them. Do this. They have managers. They have handlers. They have people that tell them, you know, once you reach a certain level as, you know, a black person in this country, you have people who invest in you, you know. So they really don't have no freedom. We have more freedom than them sitting at this table talking about
that.
They
always,
you know,
have
saying?
Choice, Brother Rahsaan.
They got
you
choice.
You always have a choice to say, hell no, I'm not going to be singing about right. No crispy chicken and acting like I've got about to get caught up with somebody on the block.
Of course, yeah.
Because
that's what
it sounds like.
Yeah.
What you want that fucking crispy chicken? Yeah. I can't
but,
say it.
See, that's the thing. They got choice. They got choice, but really, I think they don't care.
I'm more offended by them motherfuckers.
They ain't tripping. They ain't tripping off that shit. They want to do this. I mean, right. It's to the point now in 2012 where, you know, this is what they want to do. This is what some of these people who we look up to, you know what I'm saying, out there, you know, that we think are successful, this is what they want. You know what I'm saying? They could care less about us and what's happening with us. They, you know, it's just what it is.
I'm way more offended by the shows like Basketball Wives, where you have someone who has a platform or has an outlet, obviously, to make a show, and instead she recruits everybody who's boned a ball player, not necessarily a basketball wife, and when we all are together, it's always catfighting. So to me, I have a bigger problem with that, because if I look back on Mary and in her music, she's gone through stages, but she's open about been an alcoholic, I've been on drugs, I can appreciate her being upfront with girls. If these girls are gonna look at somebody and she can say this, as opposed to Shawnee O'Neal wrapping everybody up pretty, but they can't sit in the same room, and their claim to fame is that I banged a ball player. I have a way bigger issue with them. So if we're going to hold Mary to singing about crispy chicken, then we need to hold that whole, all that all reality TV.
Oh, yeah. Compared to that, yeah. Because, I mean, Mary is one of the people who, she's an artist who's put herself
they're,
on.
Yes, they are now.
No, yes, no. In this world, they are celebrities.
Not for us. But when we're talking about
reality
the people
stars.
Who they have the greatest influence on, it would be children. And children will look at those women on the Basketball Wives and say, "Oh, I want to be like her. She's pretty. She has money. She's with a basketball player. That's what I
look what they're perpetuating. Right. Look exactly what they're perpetuating. Nobody on that show ever talks about anything they've accomplished other than the ball players take me down. And during the day, right, exactly. And that's what they're promoting to young little girls, that, you know what, when you grow up, let the ball player take you down. And he'll compensate you with a Louis bag or a Gucci bag, but he's going to take you down. He won't marry you, but he'll call you wifey, and now you on TV saying, "I'm a basketball wife." When we know, if we talk to the NBA, they'd be like, them scumbags. So I have a bigger issue with them, in that Shawnee O'Neal co-signs on it and then had to put something out there like she had the nerves to like talk about other reality shows and how black folks are perpetuated.
But what's so funny
and that's
about
all
it,
they put out there, the Flavor Flav show.
Yeah. Right. I think what Rahsaan said though about people who are in these positions having handlers and basically folks who are basically running them and telling them what to do. Shawnee O'Neal is the most blatant example of this. To me, her position on TV, in media, speaks volumes. Because normally for us, we know that there's a bunch of people behind the scenes orchestrating these reality shows. We know that a good portion of them are actually scripted. But you never are really privy to who those people are and what they're doing. Her position as a pimp in this game is so clear and obvious, because we're not going to get whatever drama Shawnee's dealing with. Right. We're not going to see Shawnee and Shaq argue on television. Right. We're not going to know who she's sleeping with. Right. Right.
But we know the little boy she keeps toting around.
Right. But we're not going to see it. She's not going to put it out there for us, but she is going to collect that check while the rest of those chicks get down and act foolish on television. What bothers me about it, and this is why I feel like I'm okay with Mary catching her $2 million. I'm more pissed at Burger King for conceptualizing this whack ass idea and putting together a really terrible commercial campaign. It's an awful ad campaign. Mary has already made her contribution in regards to leaving a stamp with her music. She's touched a lot of lives. Her music has soothed a lot of people. She's done that already. But the rest of these women that are out there perpetuating these images of fame, celebrity, wealth, and success, and all they're doing is fighting. Nobody's talking about building businesses. Nobody's talking about opening foundations. Nobody's talking about going in communities and helping anybody. Nobody's talking even about building family, even though all these shows are about wives. To me, that is a massive problem.
It's a misnomer, though. That's the thing that drives me crazy about our society, period. We put monikers on people and situations that are total fallacies.
Yes.
I don't know any of these women that are currently in marriages.
Thank
and the
you.
Fact that we allow
or
that,
have
that,
ever been.
But my right. thing is, that, but that right. to me is just a symptom of America's inability to deal with truth. The fact that that would even be allowed to be, the fact that we allow a show to be called Basketball Wives and nobody's married.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? The fact that LeBron could be called King James and won a championship, don't have any rings or crowns to think of. You know, these are the things we do in the society and we perpetuate it. And that to me is the beginning of the issue, but also with the Basketball Wives versus Mary, and I just want to go on record as saying that I love Mary J. Blige, and I'm not really mad at her ultimately. But I guess for me, it's about images, and I take up the same issue with Tyler Perry. You know, I just want to see more diverse images of us doing things that aren't stereotypes of what. Of who we are. That's all I feel like we see.
And I agree with
you
with that.
That's why the parody is hilarious.
Yeah.
Because they're like, well, let's put in all the stereotypes of black people. Stepping, drinking, partying.
Right.
You know what I mean? And these are the things that you see. And that's why it's actually great satire, because you're like, you're just commenting on what actually always happens. What would have been I think I would have not had a problem with it if she was just singing the hook. Because that's what it is. It's crispy chicken.
And it was an easy thing for Mary, because she did come out on the scene as like the spunky.
That's the old Mary.
Yeah. And so they played on that, and it was easy. It was simple. They could have been a lot more creative in regards to how they went with this particular campaign. They should have called the other dude and had him do it.
You know what it is, too? It's like, I mean, like Mary at this point, you
she's
know
above
what I'm
that.
She's above that. You know what I'm saying? She ain't been in the game for like 20 plus years. And it's like she has her own, she has her own makeup and perfume, right?
She endorses something.
So it's like, come on. I mean, Burger King, you know what I'm saying? At this stage of the game, you know? Right. And I love Mary. You know what I'm saying? Her first two albums, classic. First three, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah, first three albums, classic. You know what I mean? But at the same time, it's just like, you know, I just expected more. You know what I'm saying? So it's that. I mean, that's just my whole thing about it.
Is that the question? Given where people are in their careers, given how much Mary has been through, given probably the people she's been interacted with, you know what I mean? She's been all over the world. She's probably met some of, and she's about to play, or is probably in production or post production of playing Nina Simone.
Oh, really?
You know what I mean?
All right.
Don't even talk about it. But anyway, it's not a good call at all. But anyway, and that's not, listen, Mary, that's not a slight against you, sister. But I'm sorry there. Anyway, but what I'm saying is, when you think about what Nina Simone stood for, you know, these are all things that we have to put the pieces together, my people. We have to put the pieces together. And when you look at Nina Simone, would be appalled. She would never, if you know Nina Simone, she wouldn't be talking about no crispy chicken. And if anything, she'd be saying, God damn the crispy chicken. Go fry your own damn crispy chicken. You know what I mean?
Man, she would. This is a woman who would not perform until everybody was seated and shut the hell up.
Exactly. I mean, and that's what I'm saying. And so when you think about like Mary's playing that prolific profile of a human being, but then doing this $2 million crispy chicken, it's just hard to see that. And you do expect more from people who, like, again, you when you know better, you do better. And you have influence. That's the other thing that I want to talk about is influence. When you have influence, this is why the Basketball Wives It is a shame.
Because and it's why Burger King went to Mary J.
You have influence, and if you don't realize the power that you have, then if you could, Mary J. could have said, no, I don't. Can we take this a different direction? Because I don't really like what that's saying. Just on my knowledge, they would have listened to Mary J. Because at the end of the day, they want Mary J. singing about the crispy chicken.
She can do so more for them than they can do for her.
Exactly.
I don't know about that. And I think it's back to the whole idea of perception, and that we think that because Mary J. has been in the game for so long that she's paid and that she's earned so much money, and she still has so much money. I mean, and that's not necessarily true. I think
it is a bad economy.
Yeah. Well, not just that. I just think that given what she's been through, there's no telling where her money's been spent or how it's been spent.
I'm going to go on record without even knowing any facts, and I know she got at least $10 million liquid.
But see, that's why I get slightly offended, because we look at people's bank accounts, we look at everything, and then we select what they should be for us. When we're all human, we all fall short. We've all done things that our community wouldn't be proud of. I know I've made moves where every black woman wouldn't be proud of me. So we hold people to these standards, and then it's like the end-all, be-all, Mary, you have to be this. Think of where Mary came from. And then if she is doing Nina Simone, that says she's had some connection to it. Now, can she pull it off? Maybe not. But the fact that she's even saying, this is what I want to do. Like, what leading roles has Mary done? None. And that's not to say nobody has ever asked her to do anything. I'm very certain they've come to her. Well, she did that one movie with Q-Tip. And she played the ghetto mom in the projects, right? And didn't do anything else after that. I'm certain many a roles came her way to be ghetto mama, ghetto sister, ghetto girlfriend. And now she's doing Nina Simone. That wasn't by surprise. I'm sure she knew who she was. So we got to, like, open our minds up and get off the fact that she's saying a 30-second hook about crispy chicken. And now, oh, God.
It's not just the 30-second hook. It's the way she's being portrayed in the 30-second hook. It's the way, it's like what Chris said earlier, how she interrupts them, you know. What's that, crispy chicken?
Black women are like that, and it's okay.
Okay, but my thing is, I don't want to see that black woman all the time. Especially in the age of President Obama and Michelle Obama, who's one of the fiercest black women to ever walk the planet. I don't need you to constantly be
reminding me. Everybody is not going to be Michelle Obama.
But the images that they assert.
That way. I want people striving to be a basketball wife. You know why?
Exactly,
because
I agree.
It's ignorant.
I totally agree with you. But there are some women in the projects that are never going to be Michelle Obama. They're going to be sassy. They're going to take care of their...
Why do they have to be?
Why can I not be a mother? And these are the circumstances I'm in. And I'm ready. You look at Isaiah Washington. Is that the basketball player? His mom, she raised a tight ship. She could not be Michelle Obama. But she raised Isaiah... Is it Isaiah Washington? Help me out. Isaiah Thomas, the basketball player. So when we put these expectations on every...
My expectations are about excellence. I'm not saying you have to be the First Lady of the United States, but what I'm saying is you can carry yourself in a way that brings dignity to yourself.
There's going to be a variety of dignity, different on every aspect.
I get what Michael's saying just on this point. I reached a level not too long ago where I can't watch any of this fucking basketball wives on the show. I watched it, and at some point, just hearing it, yes, and like watching, like, wow, these are really how women are portrayed, and like,
and
wondering, like,
and
why the
like
fuck
yes.
do, and I was like, I don't know really anybody if I know I don't like you, we don't get along, and I know you going to an event, I'm not going.
Right.
Or if I'm going there, I might not say nothing to you. Why the fuck? I'm tired of seeing these chicks fight in the club.
Exactly. Like, fighting.
And thinking that, and I guess Malcolm's point is...
Well, we got to... Right. We just have to broaden the image. Because when we say that the only... But that's going to be a problem. If we say the only image of success and excellence is Michelle Obama... You know how many black women you just shot down who are excellent in my eyes?
That's not what I said. I did go to an extreme, but I can name several. I can go to Angela Glover Blackwell, you know, the CEO of Policy Link. I can go to KC. I can go to many black women. I just took that to a very broad general image that people could grasp who are listening to this podcast. The point I'm trying to make is that the images that are perpetuated across the world, when I went to Barbados for study abroad, the only image of black people from America that was being displayed on TV was BET. And if you think about what is being transmitted across the waves of what we look like, who we are. I'm sorry. I don't want to see Basketball Wives. I don't want to see Mary J. Blige singing about crispy chicken. No, because when you look at CBS, NBC, and all their primetime shows, white people get to show themselves as quirky, romantic, angry, killers, lovers, families, everything. It's a whole spectrum. But when you see us, what is our comedy? Our comedy is buffoonery, cooning, it's Basketball Wives, it's Jerry Springer-esque drama. And I'm like, this is not what I want to see. This is not what I want portrayed about us. And so when I talk about Michelle Obama, what I'm saying is I want to strive for a level of excellence in how we're portrayed throughout the world, throughout variety. Media. Right. I want variety. And I'm sorry, I have to cut down the negative folk because that's all that's being shown. And that's all that we are buying into. Because you best believe that we're the ones watching all this crap. We love it. We're loving it and we're eating it up. And my thing is, I was like, if I got an issue with it, then I can't be all wrapped up in it. I can't watch it. And I don't watch what's the other stupid show? Jersey Shore. Somebody had me watch that one show. I said, I cannot believe this is allowed to be on in America. We deserve. That's why people think we're stupid. Because those people are idiotic idiots.
Right, I agree with you saying that the images on TV are horrific.
As dumb as that.
I totally agree with you with the images on TV, but I think sometimes we get caught up. Because I heard you say when I went and studied abroad in Barbados, not every person has that. I don't want us to define the success image for every person out there, because our image of what success is and what it should look like is definitely going to be different in other communities. Now, the images on TV, and I think we're talking about two different things. The images on TV absolutely have got to go. But we get stuck on, you know, and I love Michelle Obama. Absolutely. But I can't expect every woman to reach that plateau. And if she doesn't, then I'm chopping her down.
Yeah, it gets variety. We do need variety. Because, I mean, it goes back to, you know, the whole hip-hop thing. I mean, I grew up as a hip-hop fan. I still am. And I don't listen to it as much as I like to. And it's just... it's awful. Like, I can't... look, I'm a guy. I do like seeing... every now and then, I like seeing chicks... I like seeing sisters that just physically are attractive, that got the big titties, big ass, all that. I like that. But if that's all you giving me, I have a problem. As much as part of me enjoys it, at some point I'm like, is this really it? Is this all the fucking women going to be? And I hate, because I don't want other women to be like, oh, this is what y'all want? All y'all want is just a chick who's going to give it up to you? I'm like, no. If you put some fucking clothes on, and still was sexy, we be all right with it. But if you just gonna give up the ass, we gonna take the ass. I'm still with the Dave Chappelle. He said back in 1990, if pussy was a stock, it would be plummeting. Because you just put it out there for guys. And if you were like, you know what, I'm not giving it up, and you have to come better. If women as a whole would be like, you know what, y'all have to come better than that in order to get this. Guys would. But if you're just like, well... he said he wouldn't, if I don't give it up, then he ain't gonna like me. Well, fuck him.
That's my expectation of excellence. You're saying right. That my punani is better than you trying to get up. No.
It's worth more than me just giving it to you.
That's the only point I'm trying to make, Toria, is that I'm not saying, look, you can be from anywhere, whether it's from the barrios, the hoods, or from Beverly Hills to Rancho's Palos Verdes. I'm saying, please have a level of excellence that says I'm striving to be something better. And for me, the images that are coming out specifically, and this is probably a broader topic about reality TV, they are really destroying the conscious, the moral character of this country. And we don't even realize it. And we're like, oh, it's just fun. No, images have power. People start to believe this. And they don't even realize that a lot of this stuff is scripted, right. Which is even worse because they're scripting the stupidity.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? This stuff. So for any child, I'm like, why don't you strive to be, if I'm going to say you can get A's, but I believe that, well, you know, everybody can't get A's. No, I'm going to say that you always can get an A. And if you try your hardest to get that A, I will be happy with that. But I'm not going to ever say you could probably only get C's or B's.
No, I'm saying.
I'm always going to say you got to strive for the top. And if Michelle is the wrong, then strive to be the most upstanding community leader in your neighborhood. Strive to be that incredible person who talked to you on the street and had a kind word to you. I don't care what it is, but strive to be something greater than depending on another Negro's money. Strive to be something better than being pregnant at a young age. Strive to be something better than what your circumstances say you were supposed to be. Because that you're only as you're creating your own glass ceiling, right. and you know, we all know the sky is the limit.
We totally agree on that. I just want to be clear that we don't define what excellence is for everybody, because that's part of the divide in the black community. All of us sitting at this table, believe it or not, we have a different privilege from the average people out there.
Agreed.
We do. So our perspectives and everything we bring to the table, the fact that we're even talking about Nina Simone, we get it. Do you think half of the other kids or anybody that will be listening to this, well, obviously because they're following Black Is Online, may not even know who Nina Simone is. So we've got to keep it open, because that's where we lose our black community when we, that come from a different background, we kind of, but you know, close the door on them because they're not stepping up to our image.
Well, let me ask you this, Toria. How do you relate or close the divide between say someone who has had more privilege than these people you speak of?
How do we close the divide?
Yeah, I mean, how do you relate if we can't speak to them and relate to them using what we know, despite the fact that they may not be aware of it? How do we relate to them? Do we use these negative images as examples to try to make our point?
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. I think part of relating is knowing that I'm not defining for you what you should be in my eyes. Because you and I don't want anybody defining. At the end of the day, we don't want anybody defining for us what we should step to. I totally agree with everybody, because I'm the one that brought that up, that Basketball Wives is horrible.
Yeah, but I think there's a very thin line between defining and setting a standard. You know, and in order to set a standard, you do have to have a definition to some extent. Because you can't just say, okay, I want you to be excellent, and there be no concept of what excellent is, or there be such a broad definition to where, you know, to be an excellent porn star means that you've shot 100 videos. Well, is that really excellent? I don't know.
Depend on who you ask, right?
Right.
I thought you was going to say you gave major head. That made
I'm just saying. You know, but you understand the point that I'm making.
We have different definitions already of excellence.
Right.
No, I'm super head.
Right, I'm just asking.
Right, and this guy, you know, and this chick like her is just, you know, and guys got bad examples too. I mean, a lot of it is all with the parenting, and I think a lot of it was scary in this generation is what these kids having kids early is. I'm scared that the new generation is not going to learn from history that a lot of us sacrificed for the generation that's not here yet. From the ones who were slaves down to civil rights, it wasn't like, well, I'm going to fight this fight so I can live better. It's like, it's not about me. It's about the ones that are coming up that hopefully they don't have to go through this shit. The shit that bothers me the most is seeing these kids. I'm like, why the fuck are we back to the point where people got lynched and killed, hung, whatever you want to call it, whipped every day just to teach their kids how to read a book? And nowadays, motherfuckers don't want to read. Like, do you know people died because they wanted to pick up a book that that my 3-year-old son can read? They wouldn't like, no, you can't read that. You can't just read Sally went here to the store. Just basic 3-letter words. They don't want you to learn. And our kids don't even want to learn that. Or we're not even pushing our kids to feel like, you know, I remember we were growing up and they had them commercials about adults who didn't know how to read. Yeah. And first we was like, wow, adults didn't know how to read. And then at some point you were like, okay, I can see somebody, you know, that happens. Like, wow, I wouldn't want that to happen to my kid.
But see, there's a combination of things at play here in regards to illiteracy, in regards to the images that are out there and the way the media is shaped and the way all of this is perpetuated, and our kids leaning in dependency on technology. All of that turns a human being into a robot. When a human being cannot read and process and reason for themselves, but has a computerized, battery-operated, electrified component that tells them everything, that they can just punch buttons and it feeds out whatever it is that they need, they're not having to think and do for themselves. They become dependent. dependent on it, that makes that person into an android, basically. Yeah. And that's kind of where our people are headed. This is the new slavery, yeah, so to speak. Trust and believe.
It's not just black people.
No, it's everybody.
No, it's everybody. Yeah.
But our kids specifically are at a disproportionate rate not reading on grade level. Yeah. They're reading less at grade level than people who come here, who immigrate here, and English is their second language.
Yeah. I just have two words about the images. Psychological warfare. That's it.
Check out the hippest podcast in America, blackisonline.com.
I mean, and it's educating your kids that, like, you see this imagery and you know, just be aware that a lot of this shit is planned. I'm like, a lot of this that's put on the air is not just by randomness.
No, it's propaganda. Right. It's propaganda.
And you just have to know that. You just have to, you know, that whole, like, believe half of what you read and half of what you hear. That, you know, just because somebody is shown this way, that doesn't mean that's fact. Just because, you know, teaching your kids, just because you see these women on this TV acting like that, that don't mean that's the way they act.
That doesn't mean that's even how the show was shot.
Right.
I guess, and that's
all the time.
That's
right.
That's,
yeah,
it. That's all they capture now.
That's what I had to. I had to give some props to Love and Hip Hop, even though it's another one of those crazy shows. When they did their reunion wrap up, they actually took viewers back behind the scenes to show how these various scenes were manipulated and constructed. They talked about the fact that they purposely put people together who they knew had controversy because that was what created good television. So now, bringing it all back to Mary, I know she came out and said she had no clue this is how this commercial was shot. We have no idea what the actual process for it was. For all we know, she could have been in front of a green screen and all those people there, like, right, are just added in. We have no idea what it looked like from her perspective, right, to how Burger King manipulated it for its end.
I appreciate that, but I'm not giving her that easy. I'm not letting it go that easily. Because you're a grown woman who's been through some ish in this world. You know how to control your image and what is being portrayed about who you are and what you're singing. I'm not letting her off the hook that easy.
If she had handlers, that was even worse.
That said, for $2 million, you will provide for us. You know,
first of all,
I don't got multi-million dollar marriage.
We are able to take this and manipulate it, and for lack of a better term, in whatever way we want to. Just as if you had written a song and someone bought the rights to it, and then from that point on, they gave you money for the song, and whatever happened with the song after that was totally.
I wouldn't sign that contract. Because as a person who is aware, as I am, of contracts, litigation, and artistry, I would never sign that contract.
You wouldn't, but think of how many people.
Okay, well,
have.
I know. Well, the question was directed at me, bravo.
No, I
now, if we talk about other people, if we talk about Mary, honestly, I guess I'm just trying to. I mean, it's just like what you've been saying in other podcasts. Like, I don't want to just say, well, they don't know
the commercial was pulled.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
But Burger King pulled the commercial. Mary J. Blige.
And they're not saying it was pulled because of any kind of racial issue.
It was
or
just
anything.
The controversy
just,
around.
Yeah, they just pulled. They have a very interesting story. And
I have a question. I really have. This just occurred to me.
Doesn't involve multi-million-dollar contracts.
It has to do with this whole circumstance. Do you think the black community's reaction to this was heightened because this happened in the midst of what we're dealing with Trayvon Martin, and we're dealing with issues of race and attacks on us and our character? Do you think if everything was at peace right now and we weren't dealing with so many other issues, that this would less likely be something that bothers us? Mary could have done this and it would have slid right.
No,
in
I
right
think
right
it would. I think it would have. I think it would have actually. I think it, I think the outcome would have been exactly the same.
Okay.
I still think that, you know, they would have showed the commercial to a number of people and been like, yeah, I don't like that. and then it would have got pulled anyway. I think it's probably a bigger deal because there's this whole race topic out there. Mm-hmm. But in general, I think the outcome would have been.
Yeah, I think everything is like, you know, you look at all of it, you know, these things are. I just look at the timing of everything. I just deal with mathematics and just look at the timing of it. It's just like attack on all fronts. That's the way I look at it. You know, you got the Trayvon popping off, plus the 45 other murders that happened across the country that a lot of us aren't talking about. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Or, you know, it's not really, you know, put to that limelight, but it's, you know, we're being attacked on all fronts, you know. Then with this, I mean, it's just that psychological warfare, you know, taking place. It's just a whole lot, you know what I'm saying? But I think bottom line is the solution to it, really, hey, we got to turn off the TV. Mm. You know what I'm saying? We got to kind of like get to the point to where, like, yes, when somebody asks us about something, we'd be like, well, what happened? Like, well, I don't know.
And
you
that
know
is
what I'm
honestly,
saying?
And I've you been know. In that place because, yeah. I was talking to somebody today about, I think I was talking to you about this, Casey, about the fact that I don't have cable or internet at the house. Yes. And it's been very interesting living without cable and internet because I'm not on any of the pop culture bull. I'm not. Like, I go home, I'm reading a book, I'm listening to some KCRW, I'm listening to KPFK, I'm listening to some black radio, shout out to Robert Glasper. You know, I'm trying, like, my mind is being stimulated in other ways. But I want to take this off of Mary, because honestly, let's look at the company. What?
You said thank you.
No, because honestly, let's look at when you think about the corporation, what kind of focus groups did you pull together? Who was in that room?
Yeah, that's what I was
going
to ask.
I'm going to tell you, some of us were in that room, we would have probably said, eh. And so I'm interested who was in that room and who's making these decisions, because ultimately what my frustration comes about these imagery, image consciousness is that we don't really put responsibility on these companies that are not sensitive to these American historical issues. You know what I mean? Absolutely. If you don't know about Birth of a Nation and what it did to how white people looked at black people, you need to go rent that movie and find out what this image of black people has been since we've been in this country. And so I find, I mean, that's when you have like that, remember you had the ghetto cookout at UCSD? Like, I just find that people are just not clued into American history and what has happened and how people have been oppressed in this country. I'm sure you go to Germany and nobody has any problem talking, they probably have a problem with it, but I'm sure everybody's fully aware of the Holocaust and the atrocities of it.
You know, right? What the overarching issue is, Malcolm? People, because black history in this country has been a segregated situation, it hasn't fallen under the umbrella of American history as it should. That has made it so that people who are outside of the black identity, they don't have to think or care about that.
Like, nor do they even know about it.
Right. Like, I was looking today at the Tulsa riot of 1921. That's information for me that was very well hidden. I was not clued into that situation.
That Black Wall Street?
Black right. Wall Street, that whole situation. And when I read about it, all of it, it's stricken from the records of the state. Right. It's stricken from the history books. So you have instances like that where we've been attacked. And granted, all of our history that's hidden is not about us being attacked, but there's a fair amount of it that is, that we don't even know about.
Yeah.
So nobody knows about it at all whatsoever. And so many people don't have to think about our experience day to day because the history has been split into black history and then American history.
Well, that's because slavery is the birth defect of America.
Hmm.
Well, and I take that from Dr. Condoleezza Rice, who said that, who spoke those words, I think, on an MLK remembrance service either a year or two ago. And when you look at that it's so when you think about a birth defect, it's something that you don't really pay attention to and you don't really acknowledge
unless you
just live with it. You don't ever acknowledge. You don't go around every day like, ooh, look at my birth defect. Look at my birth defect. And let me tell you how I got it and what's going on with it. And it's cool. But next week is not. You don't do that.
Right.
And so when you look at slavery being the birth defect of America, you can ignore everything that comes and deals with those people. And for me, we have to take responsibility as a community, as a people, with
with whatever we can. And what we can take responsibility of is our images and how much we're sold for. And right now we're going to the highest bidder, and it saddens me.
Yeah,
it's really, really sad. We are going to the highest bidder. Yeah. And I think one of the most profound statements was made by Brother Chris tonight, because he was talking about people dying for the right to read. And because that's not in our consciousness, because our young brothers and sisters in the barrios, the ghettos, the hoods of USA are completely unaware of that, because it's not taught and it hasn't been carried down through generation, so your mama don't know about it either. You have no idea the sacrifices that were made so that you could just get your black butt up, go to school, and go do it for free and not be chased and not be shot at and not be ridiculed. When you don't have any idea of that, of course you're going to be like, well, what? I'm just going to make my money and I'm just going to do what I want to do. But we have to hold ourselves to a higher standard. And I'm not saying us. I'm saying everybody. I hold everybody to the same standard. My family members and myself, we all have a responsibility to play in this. And just because you say, well, I don't know about that, or I grew up in some place where they didn't really teach me that, but what you do know something. You know right from wrong. You know what I'm saying? Because otherwise, why are there so many people on the Trayvon Martin case? You know what I mean? Everybody knows, oh, well, that wasn't right. And some of those details are getting sketchy. That's not even black and white. This is a Hispanic man. So people know right from wrong, and they know when there are racial issues involved. They know when race is involved. But it's about choice, and people pick and choose what they want to deal with. And for me, going back to, not to harp on your girls and to harp on Mary, but these are choices that people are making. These are choices that we watch. If every black person who is intelligent boycotted the ignorance that is put on TV, we might make an impact. But we all contribute to it. Mm-hmm. I can't say I've never watched one episode of Atlanta Housewives, because some of them women is fine. But that I'm contributing to that. I said some. But I'm contributing to that. And if I was to say, you know what? I'm not going to watch this. I'm not going to feed this. I don't even want my kids to be exposed to it, because it does start at home. You have that's what's beautiful. That's the beauty, I would assume, I don't have children, about being a parent, is that you have the ability to shape a life in a way that can inform it in a way that you weren't informed, and to give that life more than you had so that it can become greater than what you are. And so I have a cousin who, she put her kids, and that's why they're brilliant this day, she put their kids on to teach them financial responsibility and just responsibility, period. She gave them a TV allowance for the month. They got 20 hours a month. And she would be like, well, if you want to watch this marathon of Pinky and the Brain or whatever you want to watch, fine. That's 5 hours. And when it was gone, the kids had to find something else to do. But it was great, because she was teaching, one, you have to be responsible. Like, are you going to save up your time? Are you going to save up your money? You know what I'm saying? But they had to be taught that. And we, I think, have that responsibility. And I would hope that in raising our generations of children, that we would look back at our history, acknowledge it, and really imbue our legacy with that. And that I was think very long-winded. I apologize.
I think it's difficult, too, because when I just think back of the average person I come into contact with the exception of us, because I don't consider us the average, most people make their choices on how it's going to impact me today. You know, I think of the fathers that are working maybe 9 to 5, some longer than that. I might be a mechanic. And they don't necessarily see the need to go that far, when my job as the father is to put food on the table, make sure they get up and they go to school. So sometimes life in itself was hitting me in that moment, like the Trayvon Martin case. It'll wake you up. If the little boy next door to you guys shot and killed, it'll wake you up. But I think when we're in that moment a lot of times, and you still have to hold yourself accountable, but I think it's hard because a lot of black people out here are just living in that moment right now, today. Wake up, keep a job, provide for the family. And about, you know, the average man, if they ain't messing with mine in this here house, I'm all right, I'm gone. And it's not to give them an excuse, but it's something that we definitely have to consider. Yeah,
would you not agree that black people in 2012 have it way easier than black people in 1965, 1952, or 1902?
We do.
We do, but we don't.
But no, I mean, you don't have to walk down the street and think, I mean, listen, the point I'm trying to make about us having it easier is that
It's funny. It's, finish your point. I'll pick you back off of you.
I guess the point I'm trying to make is that we have freedoms and we have choices that we can make that our ancestors and our forefathers and mothers and even in our own families, our grandparents didn't have.
Life is also much more complicated because we have 10 times the access to information that they had, which gives us now 10 times more choices to have to make.
And we also have
life was a lot
integration.
More
integration. See, when we were segregated, we were forced to deal with each other and we had each other.
That's why we have places like Black Wall Street.
Right.
Exactly.
And so it's arguable.
Right. And that's one thing Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. said, like right before. See, people, you know, when they talk about Dr. King, they always talk about him. They always delegate him like to one speech. You know what I'm saying? People don't ever talk about him like, you know what I'm saying? Like, they don't talk about like when he was meeting with the Honorable Elijah Muhammad or when he was talking about, you know, the anti-war or the, you know what I'm saying, the stuff he was doing while he was down in Memphis. So like when he was in Chicago, when he said Chicago was the most racist city that he's ever been in, you know what I'm saying, it's more segregated than the cities down south. You see what I'm saying? But one thing that he said, like right before he got assassinated, when he saw like the whole game for what it was that he felt bad because he saw he was integrating his people into a burning house. You know what I'm saying? So like he knew, you know what I'm saying? That's what we living in right now. We living in the burning house. You know what I'm saying? That's what it is.
Yeah, it's so funny. For all the progress we feel we have made, something about integration, and now we are totally off topic, but we can roll with it for the next few minutes. Something about integration has broken down our community in a way that seems irreparable. It's hard to figure out how we get that solidarity and community back because we no longer feel like we need to lean on one another for survival. We have so many options. Even when we talk about relationships, we've talked about relationships a million times in one of the breakdowns between black men and black women. We've said it a million times. Black men have so many options. When we were segregated and it was dangerous for a black man to date outside his race, there was no issue, it seemed, of a black family unit. Now that we have all these options, all these choices, all these 31 flavors, there is no black family unit. So we can argue, did integration really serve a purpose to assist us? You know what I mean? For all of the, I guess, freedoms and quote unquote equality that it was supposed to provide, what did we lose in all of that?
Well, our thing was we didn't think steps ahead. And to me, that goes with everything that black people create, is that we look at, like, with integration, the whole thing was to get integration. It wasn't,
to get the access.
Once we get it, what are we going to do with it? It was like, all right, we fought so hard just to get it. And it was like, oh, okay, now that we got it, let's enjoy it.
Let's move.
Instead of being like, all right, now that we got the plan A, what's the next step? Like, all right, we got it. And before we lose this, what do we get? I mean, it's like with hip-hop. They were like, it ain't shit. It's nothing, blah, blah, blah. It ain't going to last. Once they realized, and once we all realized it was going to last, I wish I was on it. I wish there were black people who were like, you know what? This shit is really going to pop. Let's make sure we get on the front end of it so when it really blows the fuck up, we benefit.
I think one thing that
we don't do that.
Yeah, one thing with the hip-hop, too, also is the fact that, like, when the hip-hop was really being put out there, you know, you also saw, I mean, I saw it personally, like, in my own house. You saw the disconnect between the elders, you know what I'm saying, and the young folks.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I remember going to battles, you know what I'm saying, with my parents some of the time. I mean, they love the positive stuff, you know what I'm saying, like the X-Clan, the PE, BDP, you know what I'm saying.
Know,
exactly. And it's like, it's there, but, you know, we got to search for it more so. Right. But, like, back then, those images was just, like, hitting. These were, like, our superheroes.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's how I looked at them. When I saw Public Enemy, I mean, it just took me to a whole different kind of, you know what I'm saying, when Ice Cube, you know, all that, you know. But at the same time, it's like our elders didn't embrace the hip-hop culture. And I don't know if it was because they didn't understand it or, you know what I'm saying, I understood you know, just the background or the history from which they came from, coming from the Motown era, the jazz and all that, mm-hmm. you know what I'm saying, which was definitely profound. But I don't think our elders really embraced hip hop as seeing, as looking at it as an extension from that through the sampling. It's like, you know what I'm saying? It was radical. It was organic. It was just, you know, coming out of just nothing. You know what I'm saying? It's just pure just art. You know what I'm saying?
It was raw, you know? It was at a place, there was just an exposed rawness.
Yeah.
That just a generation, they weren't working there. I mean, I still look at my grandparents, and sometimes I got to tell them, you know we free, right? You know we're not colored anymore. Because they sometimes, the way they react to stuff, you know, they feel like they can't say nothing to a white person or, you know, it's very interesting how generationally we can be different.
They just stay by those rules.
Yeah.
They're still sort of mentally.
Or they could be on the other extreme.
Right.
Yeah.
It's just, yeah, so.
I think, like, the point I was making, too, about the hip-hop was that I really looked at hip-hop as being, like, the last, like, one of our last strongholds to, like, really, like, galvanize not just our people, but really people in general. You know what I'm saying? Because you see, like, the effect that it has, like, on everybody. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. You go to Europe, Asia, Africa, you know, any place on the planet. You know what I'm saying? But it was... Our experience was being told, you know what I'm saying, mm-hmm. through social awareness and social competence.
And everybody was listening.
And everybody was listening, you know what I'm saying?
And you got all sides, and that's the hard part with history that people probably don't see and don't get that they miss. And the same thing with the movement that where hip-hop eventually came from, right when it became less about black people and about people, and it was about unity and fixing the problem of human beings, and let's all be better people, is when shit gets stopped. Is when everybody got assassinated. Mm-hmm. Right when that happened. Of course, and it seemed right when hip hop was getting, we had all these different artists that we were all accessible to, and the artists were like, oh, well, you doing this? I'm gonna do that. Right. And it was all about.
And you can make a choice.
Yeah, it's all basically, we going, it's like a, what do you call it? Like a buffet. We got all of this.
Yeah.
Whatever you want, it's here. And you can take a little bit of, oh, you know what? I liked the gangster shit, but I hadn't really gotten into X-Clan. Let me actually listen to that a little bit.
Right. And then vice versa.
And you notice right when it started bubbling and it's fucked up, it's right when gangster rap blew the fuck up.
Yeah.
And you're like, and why all of a sudden
that shit was by design?
Right. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden that part of, you know, being conscious about shit, oh, about your history, about black people, and that never came back.
No. Hold up.
Yeah,
because the beginning of gangster rap, they were talking, but no. We need to, let's be clear. Gangster rap, especially when you talk about NWA, they were talking about injustices that were happening.
No doubt.
Yeah.
So I don't want to say that like they were.
I'm talking about in like early. I'm talking about Snoop and Dre in that period.
Oh, well, they were just talking about getting high and smoking.
Yeah, because, like, when you still had NWA, you still had, like, when Cube was working Public Enemy and the Bo House, you know. And even his, I mean, you listen to his shit to now, when he was still, like, challenging the man and, like,
police,
you know, America with the triple Ks and all that. But you knew, right in the early 90s or something, right when you still had Public Enemy was peaking, Fight the Power, it just turned... It went really hood and gangster, and to me, it's never come back.
Like, and that's what blew up. Because what I want to do is eventually wrap up, because we're on a completely different topic now. But what it does showcase is how powerful the media is. Because Chris is right. At that time, where there was all this solidarity and unity, and the idea of black consciousness was heightened, and consciousness in general was heightened, was when we did have this other element of gangster rap enter into the place and take over everything. It became what was saturating the airwaves, what was saturating the videos, and it became the dominant image. Why? We're not the ones that run those images. We're not the ones that are, you know, behind the cameras making these decisions. You know, so we have to ask ourselves, why does that happen? And magically brings us back to center when we have a sensitive response to a situation like the Crispy Chicken commercial. I think the reason is because we know we're not the ones who make the choices about those images that go out. Further, there are just not enough of a variety of images that are out there. I'm not mad at Mary for the choice that she made. She has to work and make a check like other people. But I am frustrated that this is the only way she could be utilized to sell a particular product. I feel like her talent is so great that there were various angles that could have been used to sell a specific product. And if this is the only way Burger King could consider to do it, and, you know, it's just, it reminds us how limited in scope we are viewed. And it doesn't matter how far you get, doesn't matter how much money you make, doesn't matter how much success you gain, people will still somehow keep you in this box because that's where they're comfortable seeing you. Because we don't control any of the images. And we don't control them.
That's, if there's one thing,
they're powerful and they have an influence.
Images are powerful. And we have got to take control of what we,
well, the thing is,
ourselves to view, we allow our children, our families to view.
Because that's all that we have control of. We have no control of how it gets out there. We have no control of the ones that take over, the that get mainstream.
What we support, we have our dollars, our power. They are truly, truly power. And when you have, I didn't want to get into that.
Okay. Well, we thank you so much for tuning in, you guys. Please.
Somebody call in with a solution. Please.
And you guys do know we do have a new hotline. So by all means, please call in, chime in, let us know what you think about tonight's topic. We thank you for tuning in to the next
Love Black You, Mary.
Break. Peace. Yeah. We do love you, Mary. We do love
you. You done brought us through.
Oh, yeah.
I'm a girl. I
taste so good to me. Crispy chicken. I even feel it at the bottom of my feet, yeah. Crispy chicken. Crispy chicken.
Chicken, yeah, yeah.
Ooh, crispy chicken. Crispy chicken. Wrap the bin.